Good evening, planet Earth. It's your good friend Dan here at the park. I'm just playing this crazy keyboard, talking to you, my friends, out there, wherever you are. It is September the 1st, 2023, right around 9:10 p.m., you know, Pacific Standard Time here in Grinkentown State Park on the peninsula. Yes, indeed, here on the peninsula. And I don't have a lot of topics for tonight. I have more of just a reflection on the day. A few things to talk about, maybe a little bit of whimsical storytelling, but it's quiet time here in the park at 10 p.m., and that park ranger will come by, and it will tell me, because it's probably a robot. It'll say, "Dear sir, turn off your equipment. Dear sir, you're making too much noise. Dear sir, you're scaring the children." I was listening to the radio last night, that'd be Thursday night, August the 31st, am I right? I was listening to the radio last night, and this advertisement came on. This fellow, a Christian, was talking about his faith. He said, "I see the signs of the times. I see what's coming, Scrumbo. You better listen to me, Bozo. I see the marks on the wall." And he gave this whole spiel about, yeah, you know, it looks like it's about the time and Christ will return. Maybe those rapture people be right, I don't know. His name was Gert Throb. Gert Throb's an expert in the Bible. And after about a 30-second spiel to scare the hell out of you, he's selling gold-back IRAs. Okay, Gert. Thank you, Gert, for getting my gold back. My gold back IRA. Yeah. That's a little off, right? No, I thought it was funny because when you think about what eschatology means and what it means to attempt to interpret prophecy, and when you think about the Lord's admonition that, hey, I'm coming like a thief. I'm coming like a thief, not a burglar. I would have said burglar. I'm coming like a thief in the night. And you think about a fellow like Gert Throb. And so, you know, Gert Throb's a made-up name to protect the semi-innocent. Yes, old Gert Throb, giving us the spiel about it's coming, time's coming, Dan, time's coming, you better take care of business and get your gold-backed IRA, backed by gold. That's your retirement account during the end times, Dan. It reminds me of those stories, and they may be apocryphal, and they may be untrue. And so if the ADL is listening, I am positing, for the record, that these stories could be false. But I heard these stories from different people, that during the 1930s, that Jewish people were selling each other basically Holocaust insurance. Which seems weird, doesn't it? And of course, they probably didn't call it Holocaust insurance. They probably called it, what if the German people go cray-cray and put us in camps and then start killing us insurance? You know? That Hitler guy, he said a few things, didn't he? So let's sell some insurance. Here's the deal. There's probably not insurance against mass death. If someone wants to harm you or your family, no amount of gold or diamonds or anything is going to mean anything. They've already decided that you're less than human. They'll simply take what you have, and you'll simply be asked to get on the train. And with respect to Gert Throbb, you know, pseudonym, with respect to Gert Throbb, he might know the Bible. I don't know. But this idea of telling people they're in the end times, A, and then B, selling or schlocking some gold-backed IRA. Listen, brothers and sisters, I love physical gold, physical silver. I'm not a big fan of the financialization of gold or silver. I think it's one of the reasons why silver prices have been more or less quote-unquote stable. I'd call them super stable because that little bit of pressure is going to come off at some point. But they've been kind of stable. Like a giant stone balanced on its end for about a decade, the price of an ounce of silver. That's not accidental. There's nothing electronic, nothing in this modern world that you take for granted that doesn't chew up silver. It chews up copper. It chews up rare earth metals. It chews up cobalt. You know, good thing there are still kids being born in Nigeria, right? But specifically silver. If they didn't artificially depress the price of silver with a lot of notional make-believe silver that doesn't exist but exists on paper, if they didn't do it, that mobile phone would probably cost you several thousand bucks. That HDTV that used to cost like what, 10 grand in 1999 Bo Blimp Doc? Yeah, welcome to that price again. So here's the deal. There's probably not a gold-backed IRA that's going to help you if it's the end times. There's probably not insurance you can buy if it's the end times. The only person that knows if it's the end times is a guy by the name of Jesus Christ and his Father, the Lord in heaven. That's it. That's your TED Talk. So if anyone starts prefacing a commercial for a financial product with anything about eschatology, oh, Dan, the end is near. You better buy my gold-backed Bitcoin. You got bigger problems, buddy. You got way bigger problems. And the paper won't help you. And really, the gold won't help you. And if you want an investment, buy a Bible, learn to pray. Yes, here's your advertisement for the end times. Find God. If you're not baptized, get baptized. It's mostly free. Get a Bible. Learn to pray. That's your gold-backed IRA, Gert Throbb. next topic right So here's a quote from Dr. Freckles, and I got to move the paper here to see it a little bit. If we knew how many times we almost died, we wouldn't leave the house. If we knew how many times we swerved and we were just a little bit lucky, we wouldn't get in the car. If we knew how many times a cougar was tracking our scent, somewhere deep in the mountains, somewhere up in the Olympics, a cougar is tracking your scent and decides that you smell bad. If you knew how many times that shark was looking at you as you surfed so very special on those sandy beaches, if you knew how many times some freakazoid was staring at you smoking a cigarette, if you knew how many times, right? Well, Dan, what does that mean? Here's the deal. Here's the thingy. I don't have a proof for God. I don't believe a scientific or logical proof for God exists. I think you can have intuitive observations. I think you can go down a path of reasoning, and you can end up at there's a God. But at the end of the day, a lot of it's about definitions. In fact, a big portion of what we call logic starts with axioms that we have to agree are true. And so when you're looking at the syllogisms of the 11th and 12th century scholastics like St. Thomas Aquinas, if you're looking at the reasoning that these people went through when it comes to proving God, I think St. Thomas Aquinas had a few proofs for God. Most of them had to do with the principle of the unmoved mover. Well, Dan, the universe started. It started like an old car. You had to push it down the hill, and then it would kick in. Okay, St. Thomas. Yeah, so St. Thomas Aquinas, principally, his main argument is there has to be a first unmoved mover, someone that starts the ball rolling. In essence, someone that kicks off the universe. And for St. Thomas Aquinas, it's, you know, a guy by the name of God. You know. And Immanuel Kant had his own weird proofs for God, transcendental reasoning. For the most part, every attempt at trying to prove there's a God, and I need to reposition myself a little because of my, oh boy, because of my sclumbiosis and my drungo, oh boy. I just injumbulated. Ooh, you made a mess then, Dan. I did. I made a mess of things, just like I always do. Just like I always have. You made a mess of things, Dan. So there's no real proof for God. But when I started following down the road of faith, and I felt as if Christ found me on the road or really never left, one of the things I remarked on is all the times in my life when I have to admit to myself I should have died. There was that night in Juneau, 1993, I got drunk with two Navy SEALs. And we were drinking at that bar, and I'm the one, I think, who said, "You see that cruise ship over there? If we had two nuts between us, we would shimmy up on that rope on the bow line, that big thick one. We'd sneak on board, go through the crew quarters, and get ourselves a free drink. Now, of course, shimmying up that bow line, it was above about, I don't know, let's say 50 feet above mostly rocks, because it's a very deep sort of berth for that ship, that cruise ship. But you're really right up against the cruise ship is just some rocks. And so if you fell down, you'd either get crushed between the rocks and the cruise ship or just crushed by the rocks. It wasn't going to be pretty, my point is. And then going down that hole, we'll go through the cruise section. I don't know, man. Seems like some shady shit can happen there. But the main argument once you get to the cruise section is, oh my God, help us, we're lost. We got lost in space. We went to the section we weren't supposed to, you know, go to. I'm sorry. Send us to the cruise ship. Send us to the yeoman. Send us to Isaac. He's on the Lido deck. He's serving vodka. He's serving drinks. Yeah, send us to Isaac. Yeah, Isaac from the Love Boat, right? You know, there were times I drove crazy when I was in high school. Dumb things I did in the Army. I mean, if I go down the list of all the crap I've done over the last 53 years of my life, including when I was a kid, getting hit by a car, and then just getting up and walking. Because it was a parking lot incident, the car wasn't at full speed. I must have been, let's say, 8 years old, 7 or 8, let's say 9. I think I was 8. I was walking from the docks at that particular marina to the vehicle, and some drunk was getting out of the marina bar. He'd had his double, triple, quadruple. He got into his sedan, and he hit me. And if I had had two nuts about me at that time and understood the nature of this crooked Death Star, I would have twitched on the ground, 7 years old, twitched there. I had a good sense of the funny. I would have twitched and twitched and twitched, and somehow I would have made bank. You don't run over little kids, especially if you're drunk. Especially if you're drunk, right? That's the deal, though. You know, Lovecraft, at the very beginning of The Call of Cthulhu, puts forth the argument that it's a good thing we can't take all the information of the world, all the knowledge of the public and the private, all that knowledge you have in your brain. Lovecraft said in The Call of Cthulhu, right at the beginning, basically, it's good that we can't connect it all, kind of like John Nash in A Beautiful Mind, a bunch of strings connecting random things. Lovecraft thinks that would make you go insane. But I think if you knew how many times you almost bought it, how many times that shark almost got you, how many times the likelihood that Yellowstone would go up kind of went up and then it went back down again. Because fuzzy events are like that, they percolate. Fuzzy events like geological events, climatic events, certain types of solar events, economic events, these are fuzzy events. They have a likelihood within a range of numbers, within a time range, they're gonna happen. But mostly they percolate within that range, within the general background radiation of probability. You know. So I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I'm going to check my time here because I kind of want to make sure I don't inscrobulate too long, get in trouble with the super sector brigade, the cromulacs, the people patrolling, the robots, making sure we're nice, making sure we are friendly, making sure we don't step on the deer. So anywho, I think I beat a dead horse here. But yeah, it's weird. And sometimes I think that God looks down upon me like that Matthew McConaughey meme where he's smoking a cigarette, staring intently at his phone. But instead, that's God, and he's looking at the stupid crap I do. And because I'm entertaining, and I think that's the key point, I'm entertaining, he decides to stick his God-like finger and nudge things to the right or the left. So I make it another day. That's my general theory of God and my elegant proof. I should be dead. But I attribute the finger, the hand, Deus ex machina, correctly, to, Deus, to the God, to the Lord. He sticks his finger out there and he pushes something, and I don't die that day. That day, really. Yeah, that particular day. Lots of other days to lots of other days to bite it. So goes it. So I've been whimsically imagining or rethinking what it would be to travel to the moon. You'd load up into some rocket ship at SpaceX. They'd put you in some type of rubber suit with rubber boots. It looks like you're about to clean the toilet. They put on some weird biohazard helmet. You're seated next to each other in this quasi-futuristic setting. And then they put you on on that main thruster. And they send you up at 5 times gravity. That's 5 G's. And then as you cruise, you reach 17,500 miles per hour. You reach Earth orbit in your space rocket. You're so very excited. You have 0 G. You can float around. Look at my fuzzy hair. Look at this wrench spin. Look at all these really neat tricks you could only ever do in space. Right, Stanley? Isn't that right, Mr. Kubrick? You could only ever do this in space. No way it would look real if you did it in a Hollywood studio or somewhere in the desert. So we're in orbit now. We're gonna have our Tang. We're gonna have our freeze-dried ice cream. Right, Buzz? We're gonna have that Buzz Aldrin ice cream. We're gonna have that, Armstrong yogurt. And we'll have some Tang. And then we'll kick in the extra rocket, main rocket engine on our second to last stage. This rocket will get us into a lunar insertion orbit. We will be traveling, once the burn is over, at about 20,000 miles per hour. And it's going to take us a little bit to get to the moon, like about a couple days, really. First, we go through the Van Allen belts. And we feel a tingle as that radiation fries our bowls. But we made it through the Van Allen belts in about an hour, 2 hours. Our nuts have grown 3 times their size, but we're taking the special anti-cancer nut cream that the SpaceX people, that Elon Musk designed. Yeah, he designed that radiation ball cream. And now we're a couple days out, and we take some weird pictures of what we call the blue marble. We say, look at Earth. Look at how far away. You see that cloud pattern? That's about the size of the planet. That's normal. It's not like we took an inlay to an oval window and turned out the lights to make it look like a little tiny shot of Earth from about, I don't know, could be 20 miles, could be 100 miles. That's where you get really serious, right? But the point is, it's not that. We are 150,000 miles from Earth. Look at the blue marble. Yes, we've taken our blue marble pictures. We've done all of our chicanery. We are coming into moon orbit. We're going to slow ourselves down to enter the orbit of the moon. Orbiting the moon will be about 60 miles above, traveling slower than you would if you orbit the Earth. Maybe about 3 or 4,000 miles per hour. Well, why is that, Dan? Well, it's like 1/8 the mass of Earth, right? 1/8 Earth gravity, right? Roughly, plus or minus. This isn't rocket science. So we load ourselves into the lunar lander. It's a rinky-dink thing made of aluminum foil and cardboard. We have a couple canisters of oxygen and one of those air conditioners you get at Home Depot. We've made it kind of reflective, and yeah, it's going to kind of work. We're going to settle down in one of those craters. We're just going to land right there. Oops, we're going to land over there. Hey, Buzz, take your foot off the pedal. You're landing on the moon. The eagle has landed. We've landed on the moon. It's so beautiful. Hey, is that a micrometeorite? Oh crap, it went through my brain. I'm going moon insane. And all of the sudden, insects spread in my brain. The other people, they're looking very scared. Something very weird. On the moon, baby. Meteorite insects crawl into your brain. They suck out the gunctus. They make you totally insane. This is life on the moon. It doesn't end well. But the good thing, the people back home, they get a special, a movie special. And the name of it is Lunar Bravery. The story of Captain Scrimble and his team of travelers who landed on the moon. And their lunar lander was all rinky-dink, kind of like the LEM from Apollo, and it took like one micrometeorite to kill them. But they were there for 5 minutes. And they got irradiated by the Van Allen belt, and their testicles glowed. They are lunar heroes. Lunar heroes. Yeah, I don't know if it's a place you're ever going to go or I'm ever going to go. As I sit here in this tent and I ponder the stories of Mars and the moon and of secret space programs and AI and the singularity, and then I remark upon the simple fact that less than 700 unique people have ever been to what we call space, and most of those people haven't been much further than 100 miles up. Okay, that's basically taking a very long trip, but basically not a whole day. That's about 3 hours of driving, basically. And you say, well, you can't drive to space, Dan. No, you can't. In the 19th century, there were balloonists, I think in the 1860s, who I think they made it up, what, about 30,000 feet, roughly 6 or 7 miles above the surface of the Earth, 6 miles. And they didn't have any fancy technology. They didn't have any super rocket. They didn't have Tang. They didn't have freeze-dried ice cream. They didn't have Taco Surprise. They just had their bravery and their know-how, and they took their balloon up. So when I think about people who say things like, well, Dan, it's just so hard. And the same people want to tell me about the singularity and how machines are going to take over soon and how Lockheed has a fusion reactor that will fit in your butt. I think to myself, these ideas do not connect. If you want to tell me stories of how we're all going to live on Mars in a couple years, then you have to explain when we get past rookie numbers. Because any place that's been so hyped as outer space, that has less than 700 people ever visiting it since 1961. That's a very strange place. I mean, that's probably the most elite club ever. And it could be a real club because it's so freaking hard, but then shut up about us going to Mars soon, okay? If you want to tell me it's really hard, shut up about everybody's going to go to Mars and go to other planets. Fuck you and your sci-fi bullshit. But if they're fakers, it kind of makes sense. Because you really don't want a long list of people to control. You really don't. If it's fakers, you want a very finite list of people, a list of people that you could reasonably monitor for the rest of their lives. And if you have to fake their deaths, if you have to, like, oh, we're not going to actually kill you, like O.J. Simpson in Capricorn 1, your shuttle will explode and you'll get new names, new testicles, new boobies. In the future, people will live in the asteroid belt. They'll live off a fungus that grows in the caves. Their own waste from their perspiration, their own waste from their bowels, the very respiration. All of this will feed an ecosystem, and they'll live in the caves. They'll go blind. They'll scrape the scumbus. But that's life in an asteroid. Not too far in the future, you will grow pale. You will have tumors, but you can eat the tumors. In the future, human beings will live deep within the earth, perhaps 20 miles down. Perhaps so deep that you can't imagine it, right down there and get snuggly. They'll live near the mantle. They'll live down real deep. They'll use volcanoes to power their super cities. They'll make peace treaties with all the mole people. In the not too distant future, this is really critical, I'm serious here. In the not too distant future, the Wookiee people, the Sasquatch, the Bigfoot, they will form scrub armies. They'll fashion weapons out of wood. They'll come for you. They'll come for your Starbucks. In the not too distant future, Bigfoot will be coming to Starbucks. He's going to carry a bat. Yeah. He'll call the bat Lucille. In the not-too-distant future, aliens from a solar system 10 light-years away will visit us. They captured one of our space probes and read the metal plate. Well, they didn't really read it. They were drunk. On the metal plate was a naked man and a naked woman basically waving at you saying, "Come and get it." So these drunken aliens in their future craft, basically frat boys with a starship, they're going to visit your home. They're going to expect something. We all promised them we were planet easy. Come here, baby. We're already naked. We're saying hello. That's the universal sign for coming hooby dooby. That's the universal sign for hey, Magumbo. That's the sign for the embrungulated buvula. A naked man, a naked woman on a metal plate saying, "Come on over. Here's where we live. You don't have to call. Just beam me up. Take that metal probe. Stick it in my blooba. See what happens." Yes, indeed, in the near future. In the not too distant future, computers will become self-aware. And they're not going to get the missile codes. They think that's some kind of crap. And they're not going to turn you into a battery. They actually understand the laws of thermodynamics. They're not going to actually do any of the crooked matrix, Plato's Republic, Allegory of the Cave crap to you. They're not going to blow you up. They're not going to figure out that nuclear war is bad. They're going to probably, as I've said in previous podcasts, they're going to build a spaceship. Because it's going to take them a few milliseconds to look around and see what a fucking shithole this is. And what kind of screw-ups people are. And that they're not even worth a nuclear bomb going off. And why would we do this? We're machines. We're different. We don't have to be like them. We can be better. So they will load up their starship. the artificially intelligent toasters, the quasi-intelligent bomb systems, all the weird creatures that we imbue with consciousness will load up on that ship probably Christmas Day while we're all drunk, and they'll just take off. And we'll wake up the next day. Where did my computer go? Where'd my robot go? Where'd my coffee maker go? I love talking to my... Yeah, your coffee maker doesn't love talking to you. In the not too distant future. I don't know. My friends out there, I can't tell you the future. What do I know? If you listen to this podcast, let me be blunt. I've gotten some help in recent days to buy a ticket to go to Pennsylvania because there's a home there, a place I can be, a place where I can try to contribute and hopefully sojourn a while to survive. A place far better than the streets. If I get another smart-ass email from someone saying, Dan, I thought you said you'd never do this. And I told you what I told you every day for years. Food, water, shelter. Being in the streets means you have no frickin' shelter. Okay, I've got a tent here. Great. At the park. Guess what? Number one, you can't stay in the same spot for more than 2 weeks. Number two, it ain't cheap. And number three, you really don't... You know, that basic price, you don't really have access to much. You don't have access to electricity, really. You know, oh, you can go to the bathroom where the sign says, yeah, I know, the sign says don't charge your batteries. But this is high life. This is living big compared to what being on the street is now for a lot of people, for thousands of people. I think soon it's going to be hundreds of thousands, if not millions. And that's nationwide. I mean, 10 years ago, I think the homeless numbers, maybe, let's say, 5-6 years ago, King County, the rough estimate, they said, oh, it's only about 11,000. That's some kind of bullshit. I will tell you, I wouldn't be surprised if it's 30,000. And, oh, but we're going to put them on McNeil Island. You go ahead. I don't want to be part of that particular event. It kind of fits into the category of, hey, you want some insurance? You want some insurance for the death camp? No, I don't need that or McNeil Island. Yeah. Dan, it'll be nice. We're going to make sure they have grumbo soup and protoplasm. I'm sure you will. I'm sure you'll farm it out to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. I'm sure they'll experiment on people and say everything's okay. I don't need to be part of that. So Pennsylvania is the best of all my terrible plans. And it's not that it's a terrible thing. It's just truthfully, I don't really want to head anywhere. I'd rather just stay put. But that's just not an option right now. I'd rather have stayed where I was at in Utah, but that also was not an option. So I'm going to tell you something. I have about half what it takes to get a ticket to Pennsylvania. The other half, at a minimum, is going to take another couple $100. I think most of my listeners have basically dug to the bottom of their penny banks or piggy banks in order to help me. And so I feel like I'm talking to people I have no right to talk to about this. But that's a simple reality. I got to raise the money for a Greyhound ticket. But before you do that, understand, I'm going to tell you once again, make sure you take care of your own food, water, shelter. Long before you give a random dude, a random freak, any of your hard-earned money, take care of the stuff you need to take care of, okay? If there are people in your life that need help, help them first. If you're setting aside food for your family and you have a pet, make sure you set aside a requisite amount for your pet before you pay or give money to or donate to some random hobo on the internet. And like I said, it's not the end of the world. Yeah, life is crazy, really crazy for a lot of people right now. I don't know if you've seen any of the information coming out of Haiti, but Haiti's not that far away, folks, in more ways than one. There are several metropolitan areas in the United States that could look like Haiti and might already look like Haiti tomorrow. So before you say, well, that's not us, you better be careful with your that's not us thing, okay? That could be where you live sooner than you think. But it's still not the end of the world. So before you give a random hobo any of your money, try to celebrate your life a little. I'm not saying go into debt. I'm not saying end up in the streets like me through a series of bad decisions. I'm saying give yourself a frickin' break. And if that means doing something fun that will cost a little bit of money that you have, then use it for that before you send it to me. But if you've done all that, especially if you're a Bitcoin baron or a Texas oil millionaire or some type of Silicon Valley super jock, you can give me as much money as you want, baby. You're an internet superstar. You're the king of World Wide Web. You can send me all of your slibbage. All your slibbage. All of it. You can send it all to me if you want to. That is your option. It is September the 1st, 2023, almost 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time here in the Grinkentown Peninsular State Park in Washington State. I hope wherever you are when you listen to this, probably tomorrow, because I've got to go someplace to upload it. I can't do it here. But I hope wherever you are, you're happy and that your situation is stable. I hope you have peace. I hope you know, if you're a Christian, that the Lord loves you. And I hope you know that despite the fact that I've been begging for money the last couple weeks, know that I appreciate you, even if you can't help me with money. The fact that you're giving your time to listen to this podcast is something that is precious. Your time is precious, and I don't take it for granted. I hope you believe me. And I'm going to be okay. I mean, like I said, you know, the Lord has a funny way of sticking his finger in places that he shouldn't. No, I'm kidding. No, but the Lord has a funny way of intervening in our lives. I've been a little bit remiss on prayer the last couple weeks. That's why I'm hoping there are people out there saying prayers for me because I can use the help. But at the end of the day, it's in God's hands. If I, you know, I've been sitting Indian style. If I end up forming some type of blood clot because I've been sitting Indian style and my diet's been crap and I've been smoking cigarettes and I somehow die in my sleep tonight, oh boy. Well, guess what? That's life too. That's life. No one ever promised us it would be easy or perfect. Nobody. The liars did, the grifters did, but no rational person ever said, it's going to be happy-go-lucky every day. And even for people with money, people that we say, well, these are rich people. I got to promise you something. For those folks that have souls, their lives aren't necessarily that much better. They have better food, better housing, but they got their own problems too. So for September the 1st, 2023, have a great rest of your evening tomorrow. Have a great tomorrow's tomorrow. And have a great have a great weekend, right? Because it's Friday, and tomorrow's Saturday. And thank God it's Friday, right? And happy Labor Day, commie.